Blog Talk Radio. This episode of Kimberly's Intentional Moment is brought to you by the Seika Network on Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and good afternoon, good evening, and good night for those of you around the world. How are you? I think the first thing I'd like to do this morning is do a really good check-in with yourself, your body, your breath, your mind. So just take a moment here, wherever you are, and take a really deep breath in all the way to your sit bones, and a long exhale out, gently tightening your abdominal muscles towards your spine, and get rid of all of that exhale. And do that one more time. Breathe deep into your pelvis, and breathe out completely. Add in the Ujjayi breath, or what we called in an earlier show, or I called in an earlier show, the Darth Vader breath. So using your throat as a valve. If you don't know what that is, don't worry about it. Continue to breathe deeply. Think about filling from collarbone to pubic bone and all the way back out. Tightening your abdominal muscles gently towards your spine. Now notice what your mind is doing. Your mind could be doing an amazing amount of things. It could be very calm and focused, like, yay, finally, we're just sitting, clearing. Your mind could also be very dull and sluggish and tired, and you can't stay focused. You might be agitated, going, wow, this woman once again is asking me to sit and breathe. I thought we were going to talk about something interesting. Whatever your mind is doing, it's okay. Be honest with yourself. Notice what's happening. And then take that to your body now and just notice your body. You can start from toes to the top of your head. You can start with periphery in, however you choose to do that. You know, fingertips in and then toes in and then your torso. Whatever you choose. Check in with your body and just notice the places that feel good, easy, fluid, strong, balanced. And also notice the places that feel uneasy, weak, murky, achy, cranky, imbalanced. You're doing this from an observation place, or you are observing this. You're not diagnosing it. You're not changing it unless it's just you want to shift your weight a little bit so that you're sitting a little more evenly because it's more comfortable. But other than that, you're not trying to change anything. You're just noticing what is. And be honest with that feeling. Just like I said before with your mind, you're being honest with how your body's feeling. You're being honest with how your mind is focused or unfocused or somewhere in between, in and out, so that you know what's happening right now for you. And now take one more deep breath in and take it as a clearing breath. So bringing in that breath, breathing in and expanding all the space in your body. And exhale away tension, toxins, anything that's willing to go. And do that one more time. Breathing in and then breathing out. Ah. So, how are you? How are you feeling? Today's show is continuing the practice and talking about how love and peace are practices. The practice of love, and we've talked about in earlier shows, the practice of letting go and allowing acceptance. Again, that doesn't mean you're condoning, it just means you're accepting. And peace. Peace is loaded. In this context, we're going to think of peace as certainly the opposite of war in every kind of way that war could be or violence could be. And what is? So what is peace versus a place you have to get to? So, or being peaceful with what is, that's probably better. Being okay with, in the allowance of, acceptance of, really they go hand in hand. And I was talking with my teacher last night, and I think peace could probably, he brought it up, peace could be a show within itself. So for now, it is practicing the opposite of violence, even that moment of violence that could be in the mirror where you're telling yourself how awful you are, or that moment of violence where you're telling yourself how awful you are when you're not in front of a mirror. So practicing the space of you are worthy and lovable. When we practice, we are essentially training for life. So my friend Steve and I were talking, and he brought up, and this is not an exact quote, brought up that airline pilots, practice their whole life for the off chance that they may have to crash land. They need to be successful in that. And it just dawned on me in that moment that, you know, there are so many things in my own life that I have been training my whole life for that are kind of beginning to bloom right now. Or one could say that I'm still in training for the next one. I don't know exactly the answer to that. What I can say is that I'm glad I've been in training. People that I have talked to, including myself, that have witnessed enlightenment for just a moment, or that pure sense of yoga or union with all that is, and the mind being completely still, know that it is a training. You're in that constant training to be able to witness when it happens, and then witness when your mind goes, yay, we're here, and then you know you're not, which is okay. I mean, the ego is the ego. We are humans. We're here having a human experience, and that is okay. It's the training or the practice of knowing the difference between just my own mind and my own set of beliefs, my own ego, my own need for control, and the bigger, more vast universe that I'm a part of. Regardless of what happens in your life, the ability to clear and focus your mind is beneficial. I can't imagine that anybody would question that or argue that. And we talked last week about arguing to learn versus arguing to win, and I am going to touch on that in a little bit different way later in the show, but I wanted to kind of put that out there so that you know. I think that's a constant discussion that we need to be having with one another. Knowing the difference between arguing to win and arguing to learn. Listening versus hearing. Being okay with being wrong. These are the things we're going to talk about today. So let's revisit for a moment response versus react. Response, or when we are responding, we are conscious and intentional in that. We have taken a moment to step back, put that to the side for a moment. Let's go to react. React or reaction is unconscious and robotic. Much of or many people operate from the place of robotic in their lives, and that's about all they get from life. So it's deciding, what do you want to get from this life? We can all agree, at least I believe we can, all agree, regardless of what religious or spiritual practice or, you know, or absence of either that you have, that you are in this life as you are as this human this one time. So what do you want to do? What do you want to experience? What do you want to contribute into this space energy universe that you are in now in this human form? So when you have a moment where you are feeling an impulse to react, I'm going to ask you to stop and just notice what is that impulse or what triggered that impulse. In the last show, we talked about, or I talked about, many times we have time on our side. We don't realize that we do, and we'll talk about that in a minute too. We don't realize that we do, but we do have time to respond. Sometimes it's a minute, sometimes it's 10 minutes, sometimes it's 30 minutes, and then I even said last week 30 days. Sometimes you don't have to really respond at all anytime real soon. So you can take the time to stop, take a deep breath or many, just like we did in the beginning of the show, reflect on or look at the impulse that you felt you needed to react to. And feel your feet, feel your body, feel or notice your mind. What am I reacting to? As a little side note here, there are times when we need to react in a moment that it makes sense to react. For instance, you put your hand on a burner that is still hot, but it doesn't look hot, and you pull your hand away. You need to react. You are, I used the example, I think, in the first and or second show. You know, you're walking down an alley and you hear footsteps behind you and you know you don't have anybody that you're meeting, you might want to run or find some safe space to go. That's a reaction and you should go. That doesn't mean you should stop breathing. It just means that there are moments where we need to react. Your child is injured and you need to get them out of danger. Go get your child out of danger. That aside, I'm talking about the day-to-day reactions that we have to the people in our lives. Perhaps we feel as though someone has wronged us. Stop. Take a deep breath, if not many. Find out where that came from. What moved you to react? Because in that, you begin to learn. So this is the practice of love. This is the practice of peace. When you know what triggers you, you can respond rather than react. You can change the response versus what you may have done in reaction to that. We tend to operate robotically. This may be a human thing. I know I can speak definitely in America. We somehow think that multitasking still is the way to live. It comes from a place of socially wanting to be perfect or seen as perfect, perhaps. And if you really think about it and pull apart multitasking, it's frequently breaking concentration. So if I'm multitasking, if I'm doing many things at one time, it makes sense that I can't do any one of them well because I'm not really focused. I'm not really concentrating on that one thing. And to be honest with you, I don't have the answer exactly how to navigate that practice of multitasking in a culture where everybody's doing it anyway, or it feels like everybody's doing it anyway, other than to say, stop, breathe, and notice how very seldom you need to react, or that you need to be robotic, that you even need to multitask. You may actually, you know, going back to Salvatore's going fast by going slow, when we focus on the one thing and we get it done, we can move on. Now, I get that, you know, you might be cursing my name right now. I'm kind of cursing my own name right now because my list on the regular of things that I need to get done in a day, even if I get four done, I seem to add, you know, six or eight things to the list. So somehow the list keeps growing. I've decided that I have to have a sense of humor about this. I don't know how else to, number one, get it done. I don't want to just be overwhelmed and barely pull it together, or at least for many things on my list. It doesn't even hit the list if it's not worthy of getting done. I guess I'm asking for your feedback on that. You know, what are you doing to focus in a direction, to get your list done, but get it done well, and still stay present along the way? Because, hey, if you get hit by a bus in a half an hour, it doesn't matter how long that list was. What were you thinking? What were you doing in those last moments? Most likely will matter to you. When we know that multitasking doesn't give us the most productive and best outcome, and yet we still do it, it's something I just want to ponder. I'm going to ask you to do the same. And again, you can write me at kimtalkradio@gmail.com at any time. You can also find Kimberly's Intentional Moment on Facebook, and we can discuss this stuff. And in probably a couple more weeks, we'll be starting to take calls, too. I have found, though, that because a lot of listeners are throughout the globe, as well as working parents, even in the Northwest, the Pacific Northwest, a lot of people are downloading and listening later. So the best way for us to communicate may be at this time via email or on Facebook, and either way is fine. So, also talking about the socially needing to be perfect. Years and years ago, I was talking to one of my teachers about perfect. And I actually started to call what I felt perfect was perfect, so in German, with a K instead of a C, just so that I could differentiate the two words for myself. Perfect in English meaning doubly good, meaning in the eyes of everyone, I'm doubly good, or what I'm doing is doubly good. Perfect being what is now or as it should be. So what is happening right now is perfect or perfect because it is what is happening right now. There's no real judgment on it. And it's just as it should be in this moment. So I guess I'm asking that you begin to differentiate the two as well. When you look in the mirror and you decide you need to be perfect, what if you just looked in the mirror and saw yourself as you are? Just, oh, this is how I am. Oh, not good, bad. Just, oh, this is how I am. Another little aside here in the response versus reaction, or the operating in a multitasking robotic way. In some families, I understand it's dangerous to be wrong. And a person that grows up in that environment is not going to want to be wrong. And the outcome can be, is not always, but can be a person who will do whatever it takes, lie, cheat, steal, whatever it takes to claim he or she is right. And that's why I want to go back to arguing to win versus arguing to learn later on in the show. The reason why I wanted to put that aside is that that just makes one more condition of the mind, this need or the understanding that it's dangerous to be wrong or the belief that it is dangerous to be wrong could cloud someone. And we need to be compassionate to that, open to understanding where someone's coming from. That is not an excuse for that person to continue to act that way. It is simply, okay, this is where this person may be coming from, especially when that person shares with you. I was talking with a friend of mine the other day who has had a very difficult childhood and is coming into the understanding that this child within this adult is sometimes in the driver's seat and can look and act really mean. But understanding that that child doesn't know any other way to react. Hence, we come back to responding. By taking a deep breath, this friend of mine has learned over practice or training that responding can happen even with this history. That and educating someone that this person's in relationship with. You know, this, I've had a very difficult childhood. This is what happens when these certain buttons are pressed. It is something that I am conscious of, and I'm asking because you care about me, because you love me, that you notice when that's happening. When it is, I need support, not a passive-aggressive or violent response. I need support. I need love. I need a mirror even. Look, that little person is coming out. Oh, now I can do something. You're right. That little person is at the forefront. This little person is now driving. When it is inappropriate for a person in their mid-40s to have a six-year-old driving the bus or driving the car, driving the life. So I think I would like to take a break here. Go ahead and think on that we've talked about. Get ready to come back and talk about that stop looking at the impulse and into the space of learning and the space of arguing to win it and the difference between the two. In the interim, we're going to put on the Tai Chi Symposium information so that you can go if you would like to. Enjoy.
Hi, I'm Restita De Jesus.
And I'm Robert Deal.
We're the founders of the Seika Network on blogtalkradio.com.
And we've got some great events that we'd like to share with you.
On July 6th through the 11th, 2014, the International Tai Chi Chuan Symposium will present an exciting event where five Tai Chi Grandmasters, each representing the traditional Chen, Yang, Wu Hao, Wu, and Sun styles of Tai Chi, will share their knowledge and skills. Tai Chi practitioners from all levels, including beginners, will benefit from this opportunity to learn and practice directly with the grandmasters. The five masters that will be teaching at this event are Chen Zhen Lei, Yang Jun, Zhong Zhen Chan, Ma Hai Long, and Sun Yong Tian. You don't even have to be an experienced Tai Chi practitioner to attend. Whether you're a health promotion planner, healthcare provider, personal trainer, martial artist, physical education instructor, or school administrator, all are welcome to attend. Don't miss this opportunity to train directly under the masters. For more information to register for Directly from the Source, just go to www.taichisymposium.com or you can email info@taichisymposium.com.
I hope that those of you that can attend will. So, coming back to the arguing to win or arguing to learn, we're going to take that a little bit further and talk about the space of learning, the space of arguing to win. When we're in a space of arguing to win, we're ego-centered. We're guarded and tight and essentially unable, or I prefer the word disabled. You have disabled yourself. When you're in the space of learning, you can learn. You're relaxed and able. So the difference really being one is tight, one is relaxed. One enables you or ables you, and one disables you. When we are in the space of learning, we are ego decentralized. And, you know, the practice of yoga, and actually the practice, many practices, the practice of yoga is observing the ego. To begin with, and many of us, that's all we do in this lifetime is observe the ego, which comes back to, you know, what we've been talking about so far, being in a practice. We're no longer attached to our thoughts or identified with or identifying with only our thoughts. Therefore, we are in a space of complete transformation, and talking with my teacher last night, Salvatore, state of grace. I actually really invite you to be in the space of learning. Here's the thing. In my own practice, in my own life, when I surrender, and I use that word because it works for me, you can say letting go, open, in allowance, acceptance. For me, the idea of complete surrender to the moment, to being vulnerable in love and in a space of learning, I actually feel free. When I let go of all that ego attachment, all that needing to be right, covering my butt, if you will, it just allows me to feel open and free. My heart feels wide. My shoulders feel light. I walk with a different kind of step and usually immediately have a bit of a humorous response to it because it's not always comfortable at first. Practice that. See what you feel. I'd like to hear what you feel. You know, what do you feel in your body, mind? Does your mind, can your mind let go? And in some moments, it's very difficult to let go. It's important to be honest with yourself. I said that in the beginning of the show. Be honest. Like, how do you really feel? What's really happening in your mind? You don't have to say it out loud. You don't have to, quote unquote, come clean with the world if you don't want to. Come clean with yourself so that you know your impulse reactions, so that you know when it is that you need to just stop. And I believe I said it in the last show, maybe even the second show as well. You know, I've gotten to the place with a lot of my classes and my students where I can just say what I need to say without sugarcoating it a whole lot. And I think in American culture, and maybe it's a human thing. Again, I'm living here, and I've been living here for a while, and observing here for a while, talking with Americans, and then Americans even all over the world. And sugarcoating seems to be how we operate. In these classes that I've had students for, you know, 10 plus years, I don't have to. So the words that I've used to them, and I'm going to just take a stab here and say it again, stop, which means shut up. Just close your mouth, breathe in, and breathe out. That is so much easier, the practice of that is so much easier to say than it is to do. I understand that. It becomes easier to do as you practice it, as you train. You train for life. The physiological response that happens to us when we're in a space of needing to protect is a fight or flight. When we're in the need to be right, which is a protection mode, I believe, is a protection mode. Somehow you're protecting your ego, your own thought process. You're going to increase your blood pressure, your heart rate, and you're going to change your hormones. When you stop and shut up, when you stop and are quiet, still your mind, find out exactly what you're feeling. The physiological response in your body is different. The hormones are different. Just taking a deep breath on a regular basis changes all of that. It relaxes the system. Even if it's not completely relaxed, even if you're not able to go all the way to sleep, you are able to change your hormones and your nervous system in a way that is beneficial for health. So if you don't want to look at this at any grander level other than your own health, you can still listen here. You can still practice this. And remember, there is a huge difference between being above disease state or just outside of disease state and in optimal health. And I encourage you to train and practice in your life in a way that leads you to or helps you experience optimal health. So let's talk about some influences. Influences that happen in our lives on the regular. Number one, who do you have in your life? I'm not sure. I know I've said it in another show, the second or the fourth show. I know it wasn't in the show with Salvatore, and it may have been in all of them. I talked to you about the thread of girlfriends that I have here in the Northwest, that there's six of us, and we're on a constant thread in our text and in our email. And when we're having something great happen in our life, when we're having something difficult, or when we just want to reach out and say hi, we're always there to support each other. And you know, I invite you to find whatever works for you, and that way this works for us, where I can reach out to them in any moment when I want to celebrate something or when I really feel sad or scared or angry about something. I can reach out, and I will get a response quickly from at least one, if not all of them, even if it's your loved. I heard you. So who you have in your life is hugely important. I have a large amount of friends throughout the world that started from my school, the American International School in Vienna, Austria, in the 80s. And we are all still, in my opinion, quite close, even though we're all over the place. You know, luckily social media allows us to be there for each other. I mean, even with, you know, births and deaths, we've been able to be there for each other. So I consider that another influence in my life and who I choose to have in my world. Education, what's important to you and yours in education, where you choose to put your children or where you choose to study, knowing how that influences you. And, you know, social media on one hand can also be a lot like television and movies. If you look at the influence of television and movies, oftentimes it's about reaction. What's interesting, though, in saying that is that it may be, in a sense, preaching reaction, if you will. It's also frightening. I watched my daughter, and look, I, like all you parents out there, sit the kid down in front of the TV and we watch shows or we watch movies. It's fun to do. It's fun to get popcorn and, you know, hang out and have some family time that way. I've also seen, though, the scary side to it, where my daughter didn't used to do this, at least when she was younger, and she didn't have probably as much TV as she's had in her later years, and, you know, she's still in elementary school. But watching her, you know, get into a show where her eyes kind of almost look like they're glazed over, like she's not present anymore, and her mouth is open, and it almost looks like she's going to drool. And I know you parents know what I'm talking about, where you can't, you have to like almost, you know, slap your hands in front of their face or snap in front of their face so that they snap out of it enough for you to ask a question and for you to actually get some sort of response from them. That's scary to me. I think that says something about television and movies. And again, I'm not saying, you know, I guess everything in moderation, including moderation, you know, that's kind of a funny cliche way of saying, you know, I'm not saying that you can't have any television or you can't have any movies or that this is only bad. Noticing what it does is what's important. Noticing how we react to it, what happens for us. You know, when I was little, I always wanted to be Olivia Newton-John, especially in Greece, and I used to go out. We lived on the beach here, and I'd go out on the beach, and the wind would blow in my hair, and I felt like, oh, and Olivia Newton-John in Xanadu. And I would, you know, take that moment and be in that imaginatory place or in my own imagination and pretend I was her. That is so different, but that came from the movie. But that is so different than just sitting glazed over with your mouth open, and I often wonder, I wish I could get into her mind, like, what is she thinking? And I do it too. I know when I'm doing it, for me, I'm not thinking much. There's not a whole lot of thought happening. So it's just something to pay attention to and realize that, you know, television and even movies, you know, are about making money. So what, when you're unconscious like that, you can become an impulse buyer. Notice that impulse or that reaction that comes from an impulsive place. So noticing your influences, noticing who's in your life. Notice, going back to the last show, we talked about Maitri, which is in the Yoga Sutra, friendliness. Noticing those that come from that place, even in a place of challenge, difficulty, and those that become self-centered, passive-aggressive, and aren't even aware of it. Who do you want surrounding you? Who do you want bringing you back to your practice? I'm going to take another quick break here for a public service announcement. And when we come back, I want to just touch on for a moment greed and the opposite of that.
Some statistics are surprising, some are unbelievable, and some are simply unacceptable. Right now, nearly 30% of U.S. students aren't finishing high school. Nearly 30%, and that's the average. In many places, it's even higher than that. And fixing it is a responsibility that we all share. This is President Obama, and I urge everyone, not just parents, but friends and neighbors and family members, to take responsibility for encouraging the high school students in your communities, to support them, challenge them, push them a little, and do whatever it takes to help them make it through. Because this is one statistic we simply can't afford to ignore.
You can do your part by going to boostup.org and sending an email, a text message, or even a wake-up call to a student at risk of dropping out. Go to boostup.org and provide the boost that's needed to make it to graduation. A message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
So that was a powerful public service announcement. Dropping out of education, dropping out of the, perhaps, it depends on what school you're going to, but the free education that is provided in our country, in America, is sad. And if we're going to ask teenagers, and remember your teenage mind, some of you may very well, like myself, be very in touch with your inner teenager. My inner teenager is quite active and alive, and I love her. I think she's funny and fun and jovial and loving. At the same time, though, she has the tendency to be all or nothing, black or white. It's so much easier to live that way, and it is dangerous. Again, because it can come down to, in that, like that public service announcement, the difference between dropping out and staying in. To me, I'd prefer we stayed in the place of, let's stay in the practice, stay in school, stay in the practice, stay in training in some way, rather than letting it all go just because we're, you know, pissed off or irritated or we've been hurt or we're scared in some way. And that's what that grounding breath practice does, or that stopping, hesitating, if you will, being quiet and thinking it through, deciding when do I need to make a decision on this. Sometimes that is, again, way out, and maybe you just say to yourself, I know I don't need to make a decision right now. You know, this is certainly not a life or death situation, and I can take a moment, even several days, maybe run it past I call them my tribes. I have more than one. Like I said earlier, I have that thread of my girls that I hang out with here in the Northwest, and then I have this bigger global AIS crowd that's also coupled with the school I went with in Japan, the Canadian Academy. You can run things past all of those people before you make an actual decision or respond to it. It does require you to be in the space of learning. It does require you to be relaxed and able to observe yourself, however ugly or however pretty that looks. And then if we're going to practice compassion for others, we certainly have to practice it for ourselves. One of the things I talk often to my elementary school kids about, and even the high school kids, the influence on the elementary school kids can be greater because their hormones haven't kicked in quite the same way that, you know, teenagers, or the space that teenagers can be in. But talking about responsibility and accountability for your actions. And I teach those words, responsibility and accountability. I want kids to know right away what those things mean, what those two concepts are, to hold them accountable to the practice of both. When you hurt somebody, you did that. When you say you're sorry, stop doing it. Otherwise, it doesn't mean anything. be responsible for the bigger picture, for inclusion, even when you don't particularly like somebody. When we're being honest with our feelings, we can notice where we're coming from. So in the beginning of the show, when we took those deep breaths and I asked you to be completely honest with yourself, and I've said it more than once, how do you feel and what is your mind actually doing? Because it'll give you the information for you to be responsible and accountable to your practice, to your training for life. And I guess I wanted to bring this song up. There's a Madonna song. Those of you that know me well and have known me for a long time know that I've been a Madonna fan. And a song that she did, I believe it was in the late 90s, the lyrics are, "Don't you feel sorry for me, because I'm right where the universe wants me to be, a lesson that I needed to learn, but that doesn't mean that it doesn't burn." What I love about that particular part of this song is, number one, I had a conversation many years ago with my teacher, Aja, about the difference between pity and compassion. I probably had it with Salvatore, too. I probably had it with many people. Pity does not help anybody. Feeling just sorry doesn't mean you can't say, "I am sorry." Feeling sorry, pitying someone, does not lift them, does not lift us. Compassion and empathy, even sympathy, does. So understanding that what somebody is going through is right where they're supposed to be. We come back to perfect versus perfect. Just in my definition, and I'm not saying that German's better than English. This is just a way that I differentiate the word for myself. A lesson that I needed to learn. This is something this person needs to go through, or in this moment that I need to go through. It doesn't mean it doesn't burn. So it doesn't mean it doesn't hurt. It doesn't mean I can't be honest with how it makes me feel. But how it makes me feel is my responsibility, not yours or anyone else's. Not even the person that might be hurting me, if in fact that's what's going on. It doesn't mean that I don't hold them accountable to their actions or to what they do to other people or even what they do to me. What I'm saying is that my response, even reaction, is mine. It comes from all the stories I've told myself and comes from all the practice and training I've been in. For me to notice, oh, I feel this way. When this person does this to me, this is how I feel. Those are my feelings. I'm accountable and responsible for those, not the other person, regardless of whether it was their intention or not. Because I can then choose to take a deep breath and let it go. See it for what it is, learn from it what I can, and move on. A space of learning. Relaxed and able. We talked about in earlier shows the practice of asana or hatha yoga, versus the overall umbrella of yoga. We practice asana or the postures to open our muscles and our joints and allow us to be in a relaxed place to meditate. That's what I mean by relaxed. I don't mean necessarily relaxed and we're going to go to sleep. I mean a sense of calm, a sense of being able to make a decision from calm rather than from emotion. to observe the ego, find out what thoughts I'm identifying with, and then letting it go and having a response. So I said that we were going to talk a little bit about greed, and we may go into the next show talking about this. Next week, Salvatore will most likely be with me again. It may be pre-recorded because I have some people from my Vienna school coming into town for my birthday. So I may need to pre-record that, but it will probably be Salvatore and I. So if you have questions for him, whether it's from the last show or anything else that we've talked about, or me, you can email me at kimtalkradio@gmail.com or, again, Kimberly's Intentional Moment on Facebook, and we will address it if we can. We'd certainly like to. I said we were going to talk on greed. Before we do, just to finish up the optimal health piece, yesterday, my student Karen in class told me on the regular she gets 8 to 8.5 hours of sleep every night, and that is her trick to her health. And what we know so far, even in science, is that sleep deprivation leads to all kinds of difficulties and challenges that really don't need to happen. Not only that, it's not good for our overall health. Our bodies need to rest. So I would like to incorporate into the breath practice that you are consistently thinking about how you can get to the 8 hours a night sleep. And 8 hours is really where you want to practice. It will help. Sleep deprivation does not lead to friendliness for the most part. All of us have been sleep deprived at some point and can relate to that. It's much harder to be friendly. It's much harder to think things through. It's actually sometimes painful. And I am just as guilty as many of you. Since becoming a mother, sleep is something I have to really practice. It was not something I had to practice before having a child. And when you open your heart in such a way, it changes everything. Now, this could also just be, you know, becoming an adult for many people. When you have the responsibilities in your life to the people that you love, maybe the animals that you love, it isn't just about you anymore, and you know that. And you know that it isn't black or white, and boom, that mind starts going at night, especially when you get more tired. I'm going to ask that when you get into that space and your mind starts reeling, to take those same deep breaths that we took in the beginning of the show, that we've talked about throughout the show, stop, breathe, and in this case, notice where you are. It's like if your mind is reeling and you're in bed, you're probably exhausted and you're just in a tailspin. So stop the tailspin, because you're not going to make any good decisions in that space. That's more impulse. That's more, or reaction. Impulse reaction. The other thing before, you know, we end today's show is I want to talk about greed and selfishness. And the difference between selfishness and self-centered. So let's talk about self-centered. I defined before, when I say self-centered, I mean centered on the self. That is a good thing. When you're centered on yourself, when you are noticing what you're doing, how you are contributing to the world, and shifting that into a beneficial or positive space, are doing good for the world. You are raising us all up. When you're selfish and you're stepping on others to get what it is that you want, now you're coming from a place of greed. We all do it. Nobody's safe from it. The practice is noticing when you step into that space and knock it off. Just stop doing it. And, you know, this is honestly how I even talk to the elementary kids. It's like, just don't do that. Find another way. In that practice, like I said earlier for myself, I found an absolute freedom in it. When I surrender to, whoa, look at where I'm going. I'm becoming greedy. That takes so much energy, and it is tight and constricting energy. Now I'm in the space of arguing to win. Now I'm ego-centered. I'm guarded. I'm unable or disabling myself from seeing what actually is possible. In the space of learning, I can learn. I'm relaxed. I'm able. So when you find yourself going to a selfish, greedy space because somehow you need more, want more, whatever, stop. Take a deep breath and decide how you want to really respond to that. How can you respond to that? That lifts us all. That lifts you, therefore lifts us all, if that's what you need. So take a nice deep breath in and a long breath out. And make the decision for yourself to be in a happy space, to practice peace and love in all ways, to come from the space of learning rather than arguing to win, being relaxed and able rather than guarded and disabled, to have good influence in your life. Love yourself.
Clap along if you feel like happiness.